Hi, everybody, and welcome to the latest Battles of Kingsgrave episode, which is all about George R. R. Martin's newest preview chapter from The Winds of Winter, entitled The Forsaken. So, warning that this episode will contain spoilers for all published works in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series, including, of course, Winds of Winter material. So, please turn off now if you're trying not to be spoiled for the new book. The chapter was read at Balticon 2016, where Zach was... Were you in the room, Zach, when this was being read?
I was, yes.
So exciting. And has also been released as a transcript, which is really cool, because in previous iterations, we've had chapters being read at conventions that have not been transliterated, so you had to sort of secondhand guess what was in them. And it was timed, I guess, for the 50th episode of Game of Thrones. So it's a lovely gift from George R. R. Martin, and we have got a full house to discuss it. My name is Bina007, and I am joined in no particular order by Amber.
Hey, this is Amber Rocks on the forums.
By Zach.
Hi, this is Zach. I go by Alias on the forums.
Casey.
This is Casey, Blue Eye Queen on the forums.
Adam.
Jon Snow on the forums.
Matt.
Barley on the forums.
Nadia.
Hi, this is Nadia.
Brett.
Why are you even on the forums?
Oh, lacking sleep because of the baby. And
actually, I just got done a nap. I'm good.
By Paul.
Hey, this is Small Paul, Sir Dinneral on the forums.
Small Paul. So what, Small Paul, you have a nickname from a nickname as well.
Well, yeah, because Pod's plight is also often on Dragon's Cast, so to differentiate us, he's just Paul and I'm Small Paul.
Oh, okay, cool. And in case anyone doesn't know, the forums to which we're referring are the podcast of Ice and Fire forums, which is where you'll find us, them. They're the kind of big brother for this podcast, award-winning and far more professional. And I'm assuming they won't be covering this chapter, because Amin doesn't do T-Wear previews, but I could be wrong. So let's get into it. I thought it might be, rather than going through everyone, because that will just take forever, but maybe just for Casey and Paul to get into what's been your experience of reading the Greyjoy chapters. I mean, are these characters or plot arcs that you're into, or is this your equivalent of Dawn, where you just look kind of bored and want to skip through? Maybe Paul, a small Paul first?
I mean, I don't really like skipping any parts of Song of Ice and Fire. I do enjoy reading them, seeing how people are doing. But my overall vibe is whenever I get to a Greyjoy chapter, if it's not Asha or Theon, I'm just kind of like, oh, well, here's another dick. But
well, I mean, I'm pretty much the same way. It's just the Greyjoy chapters, I'm like, oh, whatever. I think I said in the first podcast I was ever on that Victarion was my least favorite character. I read all of the chapters in every book, but when I get to a Greyjoy chapter, I'm just like, whatever. Yeah,
I get that. I mean, it feels to me like Victarion's very polarizing, because there's definitely a cohort, probably led by Shellfish and Vic, that think Victarion is just like the awesomest guy ever. And then there's definitely a group of us, including me, who's kind of unimpressed by Victarion. So
don't forget Sir Patrick, he loves him too.
What is it with the Vikings?
He's got a volcanic arm.
Yeah, that's what you guys always say. He has a firearm. And I just don't get why that is awesome.
Well, firearm is pretty
have
cool.
A firearm and not be a total dick, I would like him better.
Yeah, I don't feel like the super magic power of having a firearm offsets the sort of ridiculousness. So, with that happiness, lemon cake ratings for the chapter. So, let's just go around really super quickly. So, Amber?
4.5.
And is this like your favorite of the chapters to be released from The Winds of Winter so far?
I'll be honest. I remember I read the Theon one a million years ago. I still haven't ever read Mercy. Not because I'm like worried about spoilers, but just because I keep thinking, well, the book will come out soon, and you know, I just haven't gotten around to it.
But you read this one, but you didn't read Mercy.
I did. I actually read it twice. 4.5. It was great. Except that everybody was terrible. I mean, Aaron's terrible and Euron's terrible, and it was awful, but it was well written and engaging and intriguing. Oh,
Flowers wasn't
and...
terrible. She just
well, she was dumb.
Misconception.
She was stupid and naive.
Though. She was a sad, ridiculous little bastard girl who didn't know what she was getting into, and then made me feel bad at the end for thinking ill of her.
We can also get into whether Aeron is terrible, because I actually just felt really bad for him all the way through this.
Yeah, me too.
Well, of course, but he's also, like, a zealot, and zealots can be kind of annoying. So anyway, but it was still wonderful to read, so a mixed 4.25?
Anyone else rating this 5 out of 5 or high 4s? Because he's loving this chapter. Casey.
Yeah, I'd rate anything from Winds of Winter, just 5 lemon cakes, because it's, you know.
It's like we're starved crack addicts, and every single one is like a shot in the arm, and it's really exciting whenever we get anything, and I enjoyed this chapter just as much for that reason. And we'll discuss it, but yeah, for a character, Aeron, who almost made me quit, or at least maybe quit for a little while reading Feast in his first chapter, this one was great, and he did feel sympathetic to me. I was definitely feeling the sympathy for him.
Yeah, man.
And so many theories just got confirmed in this chapter.
Right?
Yeah.
The creaking door.
Creaking door, yeah.
Absolutely. Did anyone hate the chapter before we get into what was in it? Just honestly.
I hate the people in the chapter.
No, but did anyone really just think, nah, this isn't my cup of tea, it's just too much? Because I could get some people thinking that. I mean, it was very horror story and extreme in its violence. And did anyone just get turned off by it? Because Mercy had that kind of polarizing impact as well, no? Like, some people just really found it too much. But sounds like we're all fans.
I can't really rate it either way right now. Like, just as a chapter, I don't know. I don't know where it fits, and it's too confusing. It's like 5 out of 5, like crazy off the wall, and I like that, but like, I don't know.
I give it the same rank as the Elaine chapter that we got. I loved that chapter for so many reasons, and then this one gets a notch down just because it has people I don't like in it, but we get so much like dreaming and theorizing in this one that I just ate it all up, and I loved
steel
it.
Armor.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I think it's you gotta love any new T-Well chapter. And this one really seems to take us into uncharted territory of stuff getting confirmed and just new prophecies. It's makes me happy. Do any of you think that the release of this chapter means that T-Well's closer? Because this feels like it's new material, like it's not just finishing off a battle that happened kind of at the end of Dance, so maybe he already had done, but it feels like he's really moved the story forward, so...
Zach, what do you think about that?
Do you know? Did he say something at Bolticon?
Well, nothing definitive. There was another panel he was at where it was a panel with him and John Procaccio, the artist who did the old book covers, some of them, and also the calendar. And he asked him how the series was going, and he jokingly said, so to be clear about that, he said, he was talking about that he was working on a Cersei chapter before he left, and he said, but I still have a long way to go, and said, I shouldn't even be here, and got up to leave, and that kind of thing. And people obviously shouted him down, and we can infer whether or not that means anything, but he did say the words, I still have a long way to go.
Oh, dear. How about you, Paul? Any theories about whether this makes T-WoW any more likely to be released this year?
I've given up putting hope in anything. I'm just, when it happens, I'll go, oh, thank God, and I'll go buy it. I'm not really, I mean, Greg, I know, is like, I'm pretty sure it's going to be coming out soon, but I'm not going to get into his cult of hope. Cause
he sells books, he
well,
knows.
Yes, so, the book owner.
The book owner. The book owner.
Hope springs eternal.
Yeah, I'm basically at the point where I'm like, look, it'll come out when it comes out. If it never comes out, fine. I'll just be depressed. But I'm not going to put any false hope in anything right now.
So you're basically in that zen space of calm, which I guess is a good place to be. I think this...
Resignation.
I don't know. I feel it makes it more likely. Because he's really pushing forward into real... Like you say, confirming stuff and revealing stuff.
I think he just feels bad and he's giving us something.
we've guilted him into...
I think he's just shooting... I think he's just shooting Patriot missiles at the show.
Yeah, well, because
no
he
show
said,
time, yeah. But just
yeah. he said before that, like, oh, I'm not releasing anything else. I'm just going to get this done. And that was before his really sad, yeah, this isn't going to be out before the new season post. So maybe he's realized, like, oh, I should give them some more stuff.
Yeah. And how about the fact that this has obviously it's got a character name, it's an Aeron chapter, but it's also called the Forsaken. Did any of you hate the kind of, I know some people really took against the POV chapters having sort of different names does this mean we're going to get more of those in TWoW? And do you guys care either way? Or is this like non-issue?
It seems like.
It's just, I don't know. I didn't really like it because it seemed kind of like late in the game to start naming your chapters things instead of just the names. But it also makes it a little easier to keep track of them. And for a couple of them, it's, you know, it takes you a second to figure out who you're reading and stuff, which is kind of cool. But overall, I don't know.
I only like it when it's like with Sansa and Arya, it's Mercy and Elaine, because they're taking on a different identity and they are starting to believe that that's their identity. So I get it with that, but with like these random chapters that have like just like symbolism names, I don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, like, if in, like, Storm of Swords there was a chapter that was, like, the King in the North or something, like, it would have felt weird, right?
Right.
I just feel it's, like,
it would have felt real weird because Rob didn't have any point of view chapters.
Well, yeah.
I just feel that, like, the first time you get the book and you open it up and you look at, you know, how many chapters each character has or whatever, it kind of, obviously, he's done it to put in a bit of suspense. But after the first reread, it just becomes, I don't know, hypothetically, Ariane 2 or Ariane 4, right? I mean, like, it just doesn't matter. So I always find it kind of slightly weird.
You think it's our fault for people going ahead and thinking, okay, there's another branch chapter. He's not dead. So that he's like, oh, I'll show you fuckers. Yeah. I won't put the names on the chapters anymore.
But it's a very temporary victory from him, I feel. It lasts for about a nanosecond.
I like it.
Yeah, actually, it lasts years.
And I think that it's been fun to see the ways that people have tried to give more meaning to these chapter names as far as like theory and fan contribution goes. You know, I think Duncan wrote a pretty good one about the ways that Theon's name or his chapter titles change in dance. And it's cool to see how people kind of derive thematic meaning out of all that stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's really not a negative for me. And I think there's a lot of positive to be taken out of it.
Yeah. And I think Theon's the classic example.
I mean, we have to, right? We got nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, I like that's it true. when it is changing or reflecting a character, but and maybe I guess this is signaling that Aaron's going from being kind of, I guess, someone who's unpalatable to someone for whom we should have sympathy. But we'll see.
No, I don't think so.
Okie dokie. So let's get into what is happening in the chapter. So I guess I'll just like go through the plot summary. And then people can just jump in with comments on the different bits. Does that make sense as a way to approach it? So the chapter starts off with Aaron Greyjoy, who has been imprisoned by his brother, the self-declared King Euron. And he is apparently being force-fed with the same warlock potion that Dany had in the House of the Undying. And he gets these sort of nightmares and potentially prophecies. I guess we can have a discussion about how reliable this is. And the most important, well, not the most important, the first vision is of their dead brother, Uri, who denies Aeron's faith in the afterlife, but then the face is transformed into Euron. And what's quite interesting here is the description of Euron as the smiling eye hidden. He showed the world his blood eye now, dark and terrible. Clad head to heel in scale as dark as onyx, he sat upon a mound of blackened skulls as dwarfs caped round his feet and a forest burned behind him. Euron asks Aeron to worship him. He is seeing the apocalypse where all gods perish, and he becomes the only god and king sitting on the Iron Throne. So just that first vision, so much to get into. But first of all, was I the only one? I thought Euron had killed Aragorn, but he's killed pretty much every other brother, but not him.
Yeah, it's. I think we always assumed he killed him, and this kind of, for me, opened a little bit of a Pandora's box of whatever else could have been going on with Euron. And I originally thought that maybe it was something as gruesome as Euron was actually the character who raped Aeron, and he's kind of distorted the memory and sort of replaced Euron with Aeron in his or with Euron in his mind. But that doesn't seem to be the case. There was a part I missed in the original reading where Euron is talking about visiting them in the night and picking them and that awful bit. So that seems to make you think that it was indeed Euron. And obviously, you know, Euron's despicable, so it's not like it's something he wouldn't do. But I do think there's something more with Euron that we haven't learned quite yet. And I'd have to do a full reread to give you a better idea of what that is. But I think there's something up.
So has anyone been on the tumblers and the boards to, like, what are the latest theories on Euron and what happened to him or what's up with that?
Didn't we get his story in quite a bit of detail? Like, he died of an infection, right? After he got, like,
supposedly
injured, right? Finger dance, right?
But then one of the other brothers, I think Robin died of the grayscale, but, you know, Euron says, but I killed him anyway, even though, like, it wasn't just the disease. I had a hand in that. So, I don't know. Matt, any thoughts?
Yuri died of an infection. Euron's, like, the fucking worst, right? He's like, I don't care how many brothers I have to fuck or kill. Like, I'll do it, you know. Ugh. Awful.
Are there any, does anyone know any good theories that are going on boards and forums about Euron? Is any speculation, is there any, like, current theory that's prevailing?
I was actually surprised how little people were actually talking about it. Maybe it matters to me for some reason more than the general fandom, but it seems like people are more concerned with what Euron's future story will be than that kind of stuff.
Okay, so on to the vision. So where to begin? The smiling eye hidden, which is now being exposed, and then we get the sigil at the end. Links between Euron and Bloodraven, or is that just currently nonsense? It just
doesn't
feels
he
like
say
there's
in
so much...
Feast?
Yeah, sorry, Matt.
No, I was going to say, didn't it say in Feast, like, he was telling Victarion, he's like, yeah, I had a dream that, like, a raven came to me and told me I could fly or something.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, well, good, I remember stuff.
Yeah, well, whatever happened, it seems like
must be early in the day.
It seems to have, like, he's embraced it now. Like, he's put, well, at the end of the chapter, we see he's got that kind of Eye of Mordor on the third eye on his sigil, as well as two ravens on either side, so...
Yeah, we've heard of this before, though, haven't we? Haven't we seen this banner before?
Have we? Is that just me being flaky?
I know that his coat of arms are up on, like, the Wiki of Ice and Fire and everything. Like, they're already on there, and it's that banner. So I feel like we must have seen this before. I can't actually recall when, but I think it was in the fandom.
Is it on the Sails of the Silence?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Might be.
Nadia?
I couldn't tell you when. Yeah, does someone know?
Nadia is always my go-to person with brilliant memory, so...
I do not remember that.
It's because no one's wearing a helmet.
Yeah.
Although presumably he's got a Valyrian helmet with his Valyrian suit of armor.
He's got like a whole Valyrian armor, which is really cool.
Which I have to say the description.
That is like
so
tank
badass.
Mode, right?
Yeah.
Light tank, because it's not heavy. It's like ebony armor. It's super awesome, but it's light.
It's like high tech for that period anyways.
And it sounded like the armor sounded like a description of Drogon, where it was like black scales with red ripples.
Absolutely. Do you think that means he's going to have some connection with Drogon or be a dragon rider? Or
I hope so. I hope he takes Drogon from Dany. I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
On their wedding night.
But for that, Dany would have to die, right? A dragon would only change dragon riders if the first one died.
Oh, please.
What if you blow that horn?
Oh, you think blowing the horn means you can just bind a dragon even when it's got a living rider? Is that how it works?
The horn is literally called Dragon Binder.
How the fuck should I know how it works? I'm not Makoro. I don't know these things.
And now that we've seen the armor, it's plausible that he's actually been to Valyria and he actually has, you know, he's retrieved some magical stuff from Valyria.
I always kind of thought he had actually been to Valyria, but I don't know. Yeah, like the whole thing about like the dragons only allow one rider at a time, that's modern history, right? Like, you don't know like what they had in Valyria.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that's the conclusion that Euron comes to, right? Like, he says, oh shit, he wasn't bullshitting, he has been to Valyria, and that's what's turned him insane. That's his conclusion from this chapter, so.
Yeah, and Euron's so clever, like, how he gets people on his side. He doesn't care about any of this stuff, so he just is giving it all away, and everybody's just falling in line. I'm wondering how far this will take him. Yeah, I'm wondering how far it'll take him.
That totally makes sense now, like when he's like, oh, I had a dragon egg once and then I tossed it overboard because I was in like a bad mood. he just gives zero shits.
Never give away the jewelry, girls, no matter how angry you are.
Doesn't care about the rocks and the rags.
Right.
Okay, so we then get like to the idea that he's sitting on a blackened pile of skulls, which I guess makes sense. But what do you guys all make of this dwarves capering around his feet?
Yeah, it's in the second, it's in the last vision as well. Like, there's always dwarves running around.
In fact, it's weirder in the last vision because they're kind of doing sexy stuff and whatever. Like, he's getting them to perform sexually for him, which is really weird. And then biting each other and shit. It's just bizarre.
I feel like it's the dwarves are the normal people and he's supposed to be like a god in this dream. So they're just like the normal people who are all shitty and terrible.
Okay.
And they're just all running around at his feet.
So I shouldn't
while he stands above
it
them all.
As like Tyrion relevant or anything like that then.
That's yeah, see, I can't help but think of Tyrion. I mean, he's one of just a handful of, what, two dwarves that we actually know?
Well, Dany had a vision, the same thing with, like, dwarves, like, eating her privates or something like that, a woman's privates or something like that. And I don't think that had anything
could
to do with Tyrion.
Could still happen!
He's going to divide into, like, five different dwarves. And
the only reason I thought maybe it's Tyrion-related is also because he uses the verb capering, and it's just thinking of Tyrion having become sort of like a circus performer. And being hired.
It's just a word they use for dwarves.
I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's probably mostly a callback to the imagery we saw in the House of the Undying.
Mm.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, but it's interesting because it does mean that Aeron's getting, like, Euron visions of him and getting mixed up with Bloodraven, and then also Dany's prophecies. It feels like he's going to have maybe a bigger part to play in all this than I had previously imagined. And the forest burning behind him, just general destruction or anywhere specific?
I would guess a weirwood.
Yeah, because he seems pretty keen on like getting rid of all religious stuff. No,
right.
You know, there is a certain amount of speculation that Euron is not only in some way intertwined with Bloodraven, but he also could have some connection to the Great Other, to the Others. So perhaps that could be an explanation for that. But that is a little more far fetched than the Bloodraven connection for sure. But you know, there was the sequence that we'll get to, I'm sure, with the pale woman with white fire hands. People are thinking this could be a Night's King thing.
I kind of feel like we need a Shaggy cast on Euron in the wake of this. Like, all the theories around Euron. Like, I don't know if he's reading the T-Wear preview chapters, but that would be quite a good episode. I would dig that. So that vision happens, and Euron asks Aeron to worship him. Like, he's the god of the future. He's killing all the current gods and going to sort of transcend them. Aeron then thinks back to, so that, you know, we're then casting back to what got Aeron to this point, and he thinks back to the Kingsmoot and how the men had got it all wrong by electing Euron, and that he'd gone to Victoria and said, look, you've got to intervene. But he said, you know, the gods elected him, so only the gods can undo the decision. And basically Aeron thinking Victoria's going to do not much. He regrets that his niece didn't get together with Victoria and unite their power. He then goes into the sea and thinks he has this sort of aural vision of the drowned god, if that makes sense. And then the drowned god kind of tells him that Euron isn't the right guy, but doesn't quite name Aeron. It's quite funny. But he just has this presumption that because he's a religious man and only a man of God can sit the throne, that it must
Seastone chair.
The Seastone chair. It must be him. So anyway, he then swims back to shore. And as soon as he gets back to shore, these mute people just come and knock him out. And he's then sort of wakes up and he's on the silence.
Is the suggestion that he thought that he was meant to be king? Is that?
Well, that's kind of how I read it. How do you guys read it?
I read it as just anyone but Euron, basically.
Interesting that the drowned god said not Victarion, though, because that clearly seemed to be what Aeron at least previously wanted. Though it's odd because then he's talking about how if Victarion and Asha had worked together, that would have been ideal. And maybe it was just a matter of not Victarion because he didn't have the...
You see, I didn't... Did I misinterpret that then? Because I thought it was the drowned god said, not Euron, ... And then it was Aeron filling in the gaps of, but not that person either, or not that person either.
I thought it was him just saying, well, it can't be this and it can't be that. I didn't think that was the drowned god actually speaking to him in those senses.
Oh, I don't think it's actually the drowned god either. To be clear.
Yeah. I just think he's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways, he's knocked out and taken onto the silence. Anyone want to say anything else about that bit, or should we go to the Shield Islands? No.
Well, the last we knew, wasn't he like supposed to be like traveling around the Iron Islands, like fermenting rebellion against Euron? But now we find out that he's just really his captive.
Yeah. Somebody even said like, "Oh, Euron has him. I'm sure of it." And they're like, "No, he's out." Like getting people to go up against him, but in fact Euron does have him.
Yeah,
and it actually makes, I guess, if you want to admire Euron's political cunning, he's very fast acting, and I guess that's the point. Yeah. If you're going to stage a coup and you've killed a bunch of brothers anyway, you need to sort of like make sure the others are eliminated or made incapacitated as soon as possible.
Well, it's interesting that he... go ahead, Zach.
I was just saying it's also a huge paradigm shift from what you were saying, Matt, from what we were expecting to happen in this book with Aaron. It's just, it's a big surprise that things are so different. And we've been speculating for the past 5 years, like what is, well, maybe not in depth. I don't think people are that invested in Aaron, but we've at least been assuming that he would be off, as you say, fermenting rebellion. And no, that's not happening at all. So it was a huge shock kind of to get that.
It was a shock to me, just like how powerful Euron was, that like he's got Pierre Preen locked up. I mean,
dude, he doesn't have him locked up. He has him as like a window dresser
right now. He got his fucking legs.
He's just hanging from his arms, swaying.
Yeah, this to me was like a paradigm shift in like just how successful, evilly successful Euron has been since we last saw him. So
I thought it was interesting that he sent Victarion and most of his strength away before he decided to bring Aaron out. Like, I was wondering if they would have been okay with what he was doing with him. And that's not why he sent them out. But, you know, he doesn't bring him out until after Victarion and all his men are gone. I wonder if they would have rallied behind Aaron if they knew that he had him kidnapped.
Oh, probably.
I think it's possible. Yeah, I think it's possible.
Yeah.
Once I see him strapped to the bow of the ship, they'd probably be like, okay.
Yeah, we clearly see that only the worst people are left around Euron. So it's clear that...
Well,
he's just,
the worst
he's
people
bringing all the bad stuff out, yeah.
And the people that he's converted to his side.
Yeah.
By giving them away everything he's earned.
Yeah, I mean, won. If you're just some common or garden sailor, like some small folk lord or whatever, and sort of, you know, secondary branch of a cadet house, and there's this guy, he seems to be, like, really successful militarily, really rewards you successfully, and has a plan, and, you know, like, has been to Valyria and shit. I mean, that'd be pretty impressive, I think. So.
Yeah, what they don't know is that his gifts are poison. Victarion knows that, at least.
Yeah.
I'm impressed with him.
Do we think that he's really been to Valyria, though?
I do. Do you not,
yes.
Casey?
I don't see why
yeah.
not.
Yeah, I can see it.
I question that he survived it. Because all indication of him being this evil guy has like been a thing for his entire life. And for him to be like... a bit more crazy when he comes back. I don't, from what we know about Valyria, I don't know if I necessarily buy it.
Well, did he survive it?
Ooh. Is he some kind of some kind of white or something?
Wait, what? Mind blown. What do you think he's like? Oh my god.
Well, Danny's vision was of like a guy taking a ship that he had like a skeleton for a face or something like that, right? A skull for a face. Am I making that up?
I think it was like a corpse light.
A corpse light.
I have the quote.
Oh, great.
Well, I think that this means Euron, but that's why I wrote it down. But a corpse stood at the prow of a ship, his eyes bright, in his dead face, gray lips smiling sadly. And I think it's Euron.
What color is Euron's eyes?
But they're smiling eyes.
Dreamy looking.
he has one blue eye.
I think one's blue and one's red.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine him ever. He doesn't seem the type to ever do anything sadly. Like, because he's never going to feel bad about anything.
Yeah, maybe it's all sadly.
Yeah. Also, about the corpse, I always thought that was Victarion because that red priest sort of brought him back after he injured his hand and everything. And he's
always thought that too.
Yeah,
I thought that too, but I just thought this, like, maybe if he's not really with us, then it would make sense if it were him too. Who knows?
So would that be like a Cold Hand situation where he's not like affiliated as a white, but kind of like independent player, but not quite alive or dead? Or
it's possible, yeah.
Hmm.
If he actually did make it to Valyria, that would certainly increase his already, you know, dramatically improved stature as a villain, if he was actually able to make that happen. But I, as you say, Casey, I don't think there's any guarantee he did it. I think he easily could have acquired the Valyrian steel armor somewhere else.
Well, not easily, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he could have. It's possible, yeah.
Yeah.
He just shows up on Pawn Stars. Yeah, I found this in the basement.
Brilliant. Love it. Oh, dear. Okay.
So it's also possible it's not even Valyrian steel. We don't have 100% confirmation of that.
But it's still, like, shiny and dreamy looking.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's Aaron's feverish mind, and he could still be having visions, you know. I mean, I'm sure
it probably is,
but we don't have 100% certainty.
Lightbringer is also shiny and pretty. that, or whatever Stannis' sword is, whatever.
Okay, so basically, Aeron, picking up his story, tells us that his first dungeon or prison is at Castle of Oakenshield on the Shield Islands, which is 1,000 miles away from the Iron Islands, and that he served porridge by Lady Thalia Flowers, who is a woman who has completely fallen for Euron's charms. She thinks she's going to be his salt wife and that she's going to bear him kids, and even though he's got other kids, that hers are going to inherit. And then Aeron just basically tries to warn her, but she's just not having any of it because she's very naive. He also asks her to alert Victarion, but Baelia Thalia tells him that Victarion's gone to bring Dany back to Westeros, where she's going to be Euron's rock wife, because of course he needs to have like a noble rock wife. And this basically prompts Aeron to fall into complete anguish and depression, and that night he just wants to die. But he still holds fast his faith. He won't be dissuaded from that. So, Lady Thalia Flowers, thoughts? Poor woman.
Poor girl.
Sweet summer child.
Yeah.
Poor stupid
so
girl.
Sad.
She is sad. Oh.
And it just seems kind of crazy.
So innocent. Go ahead.
Just that there's no one around her, like she open her eyes. Like, obviously she's not gonna listen to Aeron, but I mean, she has no one just advising her.
I don't think she'd listen anyway.
Well,
think
yeah.
about the way Sansa was at this state in the game. Like, she has just been given everything she ever wanted, and she wants it to be true.
And I kind of read this.
Something she's never had before, right? She's been ignored by, she's been treated like a servant by her sisters, and
I was about to say that this is like a fucked up version of Cinderella, because she was forced to work and by her half sisters, and then like this noble prince comes along and takes her for his own, and it turns out that he's just a really demented person.
We never saw Cinderella ended. Yeah. Oh, maybe Prince Charming.
He used his smiling eye.
Oh, God.
Stop ruining it for me.
Oh dear, but no, I mean, she's just utterly, utterly sad. And I think the Sansa analogy is absolutely spot on. She's not going to listen. Yeah.
As far as the texturing of the chapter goes, she is really the only lone piece of vibrancy we get. You know, I picture most of what's going on in these blacks and grays and browns and reds, but then we have Thalia Flowers, who's like the one positive image in the whole thing, which as far as like creating a feeling to it.
I'm sorry. Small Paul just wrote in the I am another one of Aaron's brothers, Charming Greyjoy, which
one of the many.
One of the many made me laugh.
Quellon had some
but it's
heavy
even...
loins.
We heard about his loins.
His loins. I just think it's also the fact that George R. R. Martin gives her the name Thalia Flowers. Like, he gives her this really summery, beautiful, delicate name. And I don't know. Just horrible. So Aeron is then put back on the Silence and is visited by Euron finally, who at this point, Matt, admits to killing three of their brothers, Robin, Harlan, and Baelin, which is surprising.
And banging them.
It's kind of weird because I'd always thought of that as almost quasi-confirmed. It was just so common. It's a bit like R plus L equals J, which I know now because of Shaggy Cast, isn't obviously commonly accepted by everyone. But I almost feel like the creaking door was at that level. But he admits it finally. It's also kind of interesting as a psychological insight, if you believe him, I don't know, that Euron, after he committed every murder, went and kind of waited for the Drowned God to punish him. And when he didn't, basically took the lesson that he can do what he wants and gets away with it, because the Drowned God, even if he exists, is uninterested in intervening in the lives of mortal men. So
I feel like this is the moment when God died for him, which is so interesting, because it's like, why did these people think all this is true? It was like, oh, the Drowned God makes it so. And he actually like challenged that, which makes him very forward thinking. He's like, no, there's nothing holding us back. We can do whatever we want. But he just took it the wrong way. He probably would have been nice if it happened to someone who, like Asha, kind of understands this, that the Drowned God doesn't give you everything. We just give the Drowned God the credit when something goes well.
But also, why would you assume your punishment or reward would be immediate? Why do you not think that, as Aeron points out, once he dies and he meets the Drowned God, then he will be punished? It's kind
of because of the things that he's done. You got to assume that the Drowned God would punish you immediately, right? for kinslaying and
yeah,
with both knife and Smallpaw. I mean, you gotta.
Were any of you surprised at the people that he had killed, or were any of you passionate believers that the creaking door theory was just bullshit, and so were surprised when it was proven true?
Well, like I was mentioning before, I think this actually almost challenges the creaking door theory, not confirmed. Well, the part about him talking about visiting them confirms it, but I don't think the three deaths actually helps the case of that at all, because it's talking about different characters that he killed, like Harlan and Robin. And yeah. I think people assume that Harlan died by natural grayscale causes, so I think that was a surprise that we learned that he killed him.
I mean, Aaron was certainly surprised, right, that Harlan was one of them. So, it's tricky, though. I guess we'll have to wait and find out. I wonder if we'll ever get more information on the whole Yuri thing, whether that just...
I think we will.
Yeah. But you're basically thinking that it's just more complicated than we currently know.
Essentially,
but,
yeah.
But it could be just... the reason Aaron keeps seeing him again and again is probably just guilt, because he was the one who threw the axe that, you know, hit his hand.
Right. I could see that. And plus, like, we don't know exactly what the hell's the... What is it called? The Shade of the Evening or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, what psychotropic stuff that actually...
Pre...
Which I suppose raises the issue.
And that's a bumper.
How far do you guys actually believe the prophecies? Because it does feel like a lot of what happened in the House of the Undying has been proven true since, and it does feel that there is some power here to, or am I just being naive and that I'm just read like the Drowned God, I'm reading back onto stuff?
I mean, like, maybe there's like, it's just sort of some sort of like future seeing ability, but not necessarily like anything divine is what I've kind of thought.
I believe in the magic. I believe in the magic, not in the gods, I guess.
Yeah, it seems very unlikely that Euron's actually going to start going on some kind of deity killing spree, even if they do exist, which I think is still
doubtful. Well, that was the one thing that I was confused by. Like, he's rounding up all these people kind of different faiths and stuff, and someone suggested it could just be for, you know, for shits and giggles. But is it possible that maybe, since there is real magic based in, like, certain religions or beliefs or sects, that, like, maybe he knows that he needs... like a combination for something?
Yeah, I mean, there's a chance that he is going to do something where he actually calls down, maybe not a true god, but something that is guising as one, which these things could be, and something just that's incredibly powerful, and maybe there's something that he could do with all this magic to summon them or kill them or something like that. But I still kind of doubt that part is true.
Well, I do think he's... I mean, he already killed the drowned god within himself, so maybe it's more of like a metaphorical killing of the gods.
Yeah, if anything, I think that is what it is. Yeah.
Like, everybody's like, oh, you can't do that, the gods won't allow it. And he's like, the gods won't allow it, well, look at me. I'm proof that the gods will allow it. And, like, there's no gods. So maybe in the losing of faith, the gods die.
Yeah.
Okay, so Aaron gets to the second dungeon, or the current dungeon, I guess we should say. And basically, it's just filled with all these clergymen from the different religions of the world. And they're all basically mutilated in multiple ways, including Piat Pri. And it's just completely messed up. Euron comes and sort of force feeds Aaron warlock juice. And he has a second vision, which starts off with the Ironborn boats burning. And his brother is now a sort of half kraken monster with tentacles coming out of his face. And he's sitting atop the Iron Throne with this tall woman, with white light coming out of her palms, and these dwarves cavorting obscenely below them. So, gosh, where to even begin with that set of visions and bits of information?
He turns into Cthulhu.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of this, because, like, yeah, we don't really know what the properties are of what he's ingesting. So, this could very well just be, like, a normal... like hallucinogenic, right? This would be like the situation he's in, and he knows this is what his brother wants to do, and this is just what his mind comes up with. It doesn't necessarily have to be anything prophetic, but in the context of the book, maybe.
Well, let's take a step back and think about what are Euron's motivations, right? What is his goal? It's not to just sit at the Iron Throne and rule peacefully. He wants to destroy, he wants to cause chaos, and I think, if not this exact result, this vision is evocative of that. Maybe we can take it a step further and say, yes, he will be some kind of servant of the Great Other, or some other kind of monstrous, evil, primordial force in the real world. along the lines of Cthulhu, I guess, or something like that. And I think that it's plausible because, yeah, he's not, this is not a normal villain anymore. This is a monster with monstrous plans.
He's like, it's weird that we get an antagonist this late. It's kind of like bringing Aegon in. They bring him in at the same time. And we get this, like, protagonist and antagonist that are, they seem just as good as anything we've seen so far, and maybe even better. It's strange. I kind of give them both the same weight in my own head as far as what they're going to affect as the game goes on. But now it's looking like Euron's going to be more of a big deal than what I previously thought.
Right.
Yeah, that's totally my takeaway from this chapter. And I just, as an aside, I can't believe you've never done a Lovecraft book before. Totally overdue.
What if Euron becomes a literal Kraken?
Well, what if he literally becomes a Cthulhu, right? Because isn't a Cthulhu, it's like it's kind of man, octopus, and dragon. But are those, I haven't read Lovecraft for years, but I mean, isn't that the sort of the basic makeup?
Basically.
Well, we don't have any, do you mean like wargs into like a Kraken? Or just like become?
No, I mean like what if just like he transforms into a Kraken? Like, you know, that's where this goes.
That's not good.
You know.
Let's take a guy.
Hey, dragons come from the moon, and, you know, people could become Krakens. Why not?
Well, yeah. I mean,
that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Who would suppose that?
Yeah.
I assume that there.
Oh wait, Zach, did you go somewhere, or was that just me?
Oh, I thought that was me.
No.
Zach,
what
just,
did you like? Cut out.
You just cut out when you were responding. Just.
Oh, so I was saying that there is magic that we know of. We don't know that it exists yet, and we're still going to have a lot to learn about that. And whether or not that means he's going to become a literal Kraken, I don't know. But I think that we're going to see some crazy stuff happen in the next couple of months.
So speaking of crazy...
Just go all like Dick Cheney and do their unknown unknowns.
Yeah.
Wasn't that Donald Rumsfeld? But anyways.
All right, Rumsfeld, whatever.
Is it strange that, like, the magic in this world, it seems like when there's a magic, it's related to a god in some way, which could be the other way around. Like, there's magic, so we call it godlike, but it's actually just the way the world works. But have we ever seen that with the Seven at all? Like, has there ever been any magic associated with the Seven?
Nah, the Seven have never achieved jack shit.
The magic of keeping people in line, I guess?
There are a couple moments with characters... Where characters seem magic to be spoken to by the Seven, by, like, the Mother and everything, but that's probably just hallucinations.
Oh, right, Davos has, like, the Mother, right, when he's up on the rocks.
And Caitlin has something like that also, when she's at the Sept down in the Reach.
She kind of becomes a stranger, too.
Casey, were you trying to say something?
I was just saying that if you do take his vision as a prophecy, then... There is the chance that Euron could actually take the Iron Throne, but I would see that as a situation where it would just be like the Shield Islands, where he would take it and just cause chaos for a little while and then just give it up because he can't hold it.
Yeah,
is Euron the Joker, basically?
Something like that.
Oh, actually, I think he's so much worse than the Joker. I really do.
I like. The one thing that I kind of like about this chapter is that I think that we see two extremes of, like, being super religious and being not religious at all, and how damaging and how that can end up. It's, you're not, like, somewhere in the middle. But, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So who do you guys think is this tall lady with the light coming out of her hands? Is it Dany? Is it, like, an other bride? Is it, I don't know, like, what is that?
It makes me worried about Dany a little bit and where this might be going.
Makes me worried about the world because of Dany.
Well, the reason I can't imagine it being Dany is because I just can't imagine... God, it would suck, but I can't imagine Dany being subordinated by Euron. You know, she's kind of in this, she's kind of off to the side, and he's the one on the throne, and I just can't see it being like that.
Is she tall?
No, she's not.
I don't think so.
She's supposed to be petite.
What, is Sansa tall?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh. Or is that just the show coloring my vision of Sansa?
That's just you, White Raven, saying that to fuck with me and Nadia, and it's not nice. When I said all the way through our readings of this book that I thought Sansa would sit the Iron Throne, this is not how I imagined it. I imagined her sitting it with Stannis, not with Euron.
Exactly.
Other theories?
Stansa.
Stansa, for the win.
Euron's a tough one to combine with Sansa. Yursa?
Blue lips and red hair?
No, could, no
someone can
no.
make an aesthetic.
Jesus.
Wait a minute, wouldn't it be Sauron?
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
It all makes sense.
It's canon now.
Bali.
It just happened.
Jesus Christ, wow. Mind blown. That's just made me very unhappy. Yeah, who else do you think it is? Any other, like White Walker bride?
Maybe. Okay, so it says a shadow in woman's form.
Well, that's Quaithe.
Shadow in
a shadow baby?
Quaithe? Future Dany?
Is it Stoneheart?
Mm-hmm. Possibly Quaithe, yeah. Possibly. But, she suits the imagery, if not the plot. You know, it doesn't really make sense why it would be Quaithe, but there's a lot we don't know.
Unless Quaithe is actually Future Dany?
Is unless Quaithe,
that, yeah. I hate that theory.
I hate that
yeah,
theory, too.
Yeah, I get it.
But, oh, anyone theory? No, okay.
Yeah, never mind. Sorry.
Yeah.
There was
yeah,
something that came in my head that I can't talk about.
Such a tease, bro. Oh, is this show? I just
yeah. my head? No, I hope Future Dany and like time travel stuff is just not real. So I don't want to see any of that pan out.
Agreed.
Like that'd be so, like yeah.
Okay.
I think I'm not on board with the Night's King White Walker bride thing, but I think that this image certainly supports that hypothesis.
What is that hypothesis? Remind us.
Well, so we've talked about the Blood Raven connection, and I think a lot of people do suspect that it might even go further, that in some way or another, based on the things that Euron has talked about the end of the world and the apocalypse and everything, that he is somehow tied with the others, or is going to be. And the Night's King obviously was the character who married the White Walker and kind of joined up with them from the human side. And maybe that's what happens here, especially if he's becoming more monstrous, as we see in that second vision.
Okay.
There's probably more to it than that, but that's my understanding of...
I mean, I guess he could introduce another character this late, but... I would like to think that this tall woman by his side is going to be someone that we know, but I just can't think of who it was, unless Melisandre goes, oh, wait, this guy is the prince that was promised.
Yeah,
this
but I mean, like,
right
we've
here.
Got Aegon, and we've got Euron, and, like, they're fairly late additions for the, I don't know, the kind of status they have in the story, so it's kind of a George thing to do.
The Shadow Lady is actually John Connington.
Yeah.
I was about to say Aegon, but all right.
Okay.
Is Marjorie tall? I don't...
Except I just don't see how narratively that would...
Is Cersei tall?
I think you have to do a lot of those, like the... I think Boiled Leather are quite good. Stefan Sasson and Sean T. Collins about which characters, when you're trying to fit them into these prophecies, does it kind of just make narrative sense? And it could be all the women, right? But like...
Oh, I got one for you. Okay. They show up and Cersei needs a fleet and she marries Euron and we find out that she's a... part Targaryen, and that's why she has like the fire in her hands, that sort of thing.
Yeah, being narratively doesn't matter. It's all about how we can fit the proportions and the imagery, obviously. If they're tall, if they're the right height, we know for sure.
If the hip measurement is
right.
Right,
you must be this tall to be his bride.
Exactly. Okay.
But Cersei's in trouble. She's going to need help, and if he shows up and she steps aside from the Iron Throne, who knows?
Be a dark pairing.
I somehow don't feel that in a world where Euron is even this close to power that Cersei's alive. Right. Okay, so basically there's that just hideous, horrible...
Oh, is... Well, Euron's a younger brother. He's a Valonqar. He's going to choke her after he takes the throne. Oh my god.
He's on a roll.
I was just waiting for it.
You know, in years to come when, like, White Raven's proven right, he's... Oh...
You know, broken clock and all that.
It's not going to be right.
George Lucas podcasts.
So the broken clock is right twice. So moon dragons and this. All right.
Your work here is done. Okay. So 3 days later, after these visions and nightmares, Euron is woken up along with all the other prisoners and they're sort of dragged up to, you know, the main part of the castle in which they're being held and they're just in horrific physical shape. I mean, they can barely stagger up into the sunlight, and Euron sort of smells the sea and he's very grateful for that. Then he realizes that he's in this hall and that there are dead bodies sort of swinging from the rafters overhead, and he asks the men who these bodies are of, and it's revealed that they're on an island off the Arbor. And it's implied that basically the Redwyn, Hightower, and Tyrol troops sailors have come against them and been defeated, and that they now expect an attack on two fronts by the Redwyns and Hightowers, but are confident of success. And also, it was really amazing to me that apparently it's general knowledge that Euron raped him, because some of the men just mock him for, you know, having been raped. It's just very bizarre. I find that.
Maybe it's general knowledge now, or was it always?
I don't know. It's almost like it's like a thing. Like, why would Euron put that around on this discussion?
Maybe Euron. Because it's not the sort of thing that people in this society are high fiving.
Yeah.
You know.
I had this weird kind of thing when I read that, because that's not a theory that I ever would have picked up on if it were not for Podcast of Ice and Fire. And I kind of felt like, oh, okay, there's finally like the 100%. It was kind of like George saying, see, because he raped him. You know, like it was almost too on the nose. Like, is that necessary? I don't know.
Subtle.
Exactly.
Dang it.
Thank you.
Maybe he was just talking about Aaron's past as a naval commander and being outflanked by the enemy force.
Oh, you think it's my smutty mind then? Okay.
No, I don't. I'm just joking. I don't think that at all.
Fine. Okay, but I mean, doesn't it show that Euron's doing so well? Like, these are, like, at the present in the novels, you know, the Tyrols are really powerful and the Hightowers and Redwyns, and suddenly you realize that, you know, he's taking out these major families and is utterly confident of doing the same again.
Well, a lot of them aren't home, though.
True.
Yeah, and I love his... too how he's when he talks about like the Red Wine fleet and all that, and talks about the Shield Islands, and he's like, "Oh yeah, we're gonna lose those, and those idiots I left behind, like they're gonna get blamed for that."
Right, but awesome. I conquered them.
I conquered them and I gave them glory, and like it all works out well for me. And then like I can chastise them later for losing them, but I don't even really care about them at all.
Yeah, but he's in that sort of Asha sort of school of military invasion, which is, you know, we do not hold lands, because that just, you know, ties us down.
It's not even a school, it's just a fact. This is how the Ironborn work best. They're not equipped to hold locations, and it's clear that Euron has a strong grasp of that, so that's very
intimidating. He knows better than to get into a land war in Westeros.
Exactly.
Wait a minute, what about Harren the Black? He held, like, all of the Riverlands.
Yeah, and then
for 20 years or something, right?
Yeah,
that's a good one. His greatest idea was, I'm going to defend this by just building a massive-ass castle.
And that was the absolute apex of what the Ironborn were.
Yeah, but like even then, like a couple decades is kind of short-term, and then when he the Ironborn lost a lot.
But didn't they have it like for a couple of generations at least? Harren was like the son or the grandson of the person who actually conquered the Riverlands.
Yeah, because all the other kings were basically still fighting each other.
Oh, I thought it was shorter-term than that.
No,
it's a different situation now. I mean, you could make the argument that the Seven Kingdoms is as fractured as it ever was, but it's different that it is at least supposed to be a unified kingdom, and therefore it would be much easier to deal with any kind of Greyjoy threat. But we're seeing how the seams are breaking, because obviously the Red Wine fleet was off dealing with the thing at Dragonstone, and there's all kinds of other dissent. So we're seeing how the Greyjoys can take advantage of this kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so basically all these religious clergy are sort of taken to the shoreline, and Aaron notices that his brother has a new sigil on his ship, which is the red eye with a black pupil beneath an iron crown supported by two crows, so very blood raven-y there. He sees his brother on deck in a full suit of Valyrian armor, and basically just says to himself, wow, this guy did not bullshit me, he has been to Valyria, and that's turned him mad. And basically, yeah, the Eye of Sauron is nuts. But Euron then orders each priest to be tied to the prow of a ship, and he's going to have Aeron tied to the front of Silence, and everyone else can take dibs on the rest. And just as you think this is pretty savage as a thing to do to your brother, and as a sort of form of humiliation to religion, which I guess is what he's all about at the moment, Aeron then sees that a naked and pregnant Fali of Flowers, her tongue cut out, is being lashed to the mast as well. So yeah, a pretty...
Ugh.
Just when he thought Euron couldn't be even more of a nasty piece of shit.
And what for?
Yeah, I know. Like, to what end?
Yeah, there's just no reason for it.
It's like this bastard is going to do something for you? I don't understand.
Mm-hmm. But then Aaron says something incredibly compassionate. You know, it's still couched in his extreme zealotry, but he does something very kind here where he says it's going to be okay, ultimately. So that was definitely a sympathy moment, big time for Aaron.
Folly of flowers, he called. Have courage, girl. All this will soon be over, and we will feast together in the Dragon God's watery halls.
And then his brother pops out of nowhere and says, "No, you won't."
Yeah, and otherwise, we tell ourselves, voice, you know.
I think everyone's just very delusioned by his religion that he thinks that the drowned god is just going
to
save.
Maybe, but he didn't need to say that.
Yeah,
true. Right. Yeah,
like he's shouted across to her, and it'll probably like if his brother notices, you know, it might just earn him another lash or something, but. He thinks, I mean, he may be a religious nutter, but he thinks he's being nice. He thinks he's giving her comfort in her hour of pain. So.
Well, he truly believes. I mean, this guy's been saved by his God from what he knows. So he's been, like, he found religion, seriously. And I don't think there's anything that they can do to convince him that it's not real.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, doesn't he say at one point in this chapter, like, doesn't he kind of question that a little bit? Like, why would the drowned God allow this to happen sort of thing?
But he can question it, but he still believes wholeheartedly. He hasn't wavered at all.
Yeah, and Euron has...
Not in my eyes.
And Euron has tried to undermine his faith and kind of say to him, why would he allow this? But every time that he kind of, not doubts, but gets depressed and wants to die and hasten his end towards the Drowned God, like he'll smell some seawater or whatever and think, no, he's near me. He's just testing me. He's just trying to... He'll still get me through this. So, I don't know. I kind of feel... I don't know, I just came out of this chapter with kind of respect for Aaron that he has stuck to his beliefs through all this testing time and that he believes they are of kind of succor to him and could be of comfort to Falia. And I don't know, he was a character I never would have thought I would feel this way about in one chapter. This is what's amazing about George R. R. Martin. In this one chapter, he made me feel so sympathetic to Aaron and also pushed forward dramatically my understanding of how important Euron is. So, kind of blew my mind.
Yeah.
Good chapter.
Amazing chapter. Plus, we all know what a breach clout is now.
A what now?
Yeah.
I think I knew that before.
Yeah, I knew that.
I kind of guessed what it was.
Don't lie. None of you knew what a fucking breach clout was before.
I'll have you know I wear one every night.
You all had to Google that shit. I don't believe you knew. But anyway.
I'm pretty sure Native Americans wore those, so we knew.
But what is the purpose? So a strip of material.
It covers your
it's like parts. A loincloth.
Oh, yeah.
Your small paw.
Yeah, it covers your small paw.
There you go.
Some people
But then that doesn't make sense because on Wikipedia it says it could be made out of bark. That's gotta be scratched.
Ouch.
It's just a bad bridge club, you know. It's just a bad
Oh dear. Any other random stuff in this chapter?
Do we want to speculate at all?
Did anyone think things were going to end well for Falia Flowers after like she said, Euron's not gonna hurt me?
No, but I didn't think it'd end up this badly though. I just thought she'd be left there pregnant and forgotten. Or just burnt in the holdfast when they sort of torch and burn everything that they leave. I didn't think she'd be specifically humiliated and tortured in that way.
And again, what?
I guess, from the very beginning that her tongue was going to be cut out.
Yeah, because he seems to like meats, but it just seems to me like, okay, I don't obviously condone what he's doing to the religious guys, but he has a point that he's making. Like, strapping these guys to the front of the prize of his ship, he wants to eradicate all the old gods so that an end times apocalypse can happen, and he emerges as the new god. There's a logic to it. What he does to Falia is just fucking... Yeah, no, I mean, there's absolutely... There's a logic to how... He's very modern in a way, right? In a very technical sense. He wants to see all the old gods and pagan beliefs destroyed so that a new monotheistic religion can exist, which is centered around him.
He's crazy.
Yeah.
So hold on, you're like comparing him to Jesus Christ?
No, I think I'm comparing him...
Jesus just kill pagans? I don't think he did that.
I think Remember I'm comparing Jesus... him much more to Nietzsche. Like Nietzsche, the whole kind of concept of, you know, the death of God. So when Nietzsche talks about religion just basically being a bourgeois morality that's designed to sort of constrain whimpering ordinary men, and that the Superman has the courage to break free of religion and just to realize that he can do what he wants and challenge God and get away with what he wants. I mean, that is exactly what Euron does, and it's exactly out of Nietzsche and Schopenhauer. So I think he's I think he's a nihilist with a capital N, and I think he's modern in a sort of technical sense, and he's doing something very radical and dramatic. But to me, it does have a logic. I mean, I don't approve of it, I don't agree with it, but I think it does have a logic, and it's a very sort of late 19th, early 20th century logic, I think. So,
well, I'd just like to point out that I can't quote Nietzsche, but I knew what a breech clout was. That's got to be points, right?
I don't know. I might be talking nonsense. If anyone else has read any, like S.J. Lee, talk to me about this, because I think George is doing something very specific in relation to Lovecraft. I think he's doing something very specific in relation to Nietzsche here. The only other thing I wanted to say is when he's describing like the salt water rotting the feet and inflating them at the start of the chapter, really reminded me of Trenchfoot. And when you read descriptions of World War One and the trenches and what that does to people and the lice and everything. So,
yeah,
good history there. Anything else?
Poor Aaron.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Do we want to speculate at all moving forward? Do we think there's more for Aaron, or is this like it?
I think this was his like closing chapter. I'm pretty sure like the next we'll see of him is just a corpse on the prow of the ship.
Aww. He's forsaken by his god.
I kind of like.
Or was he?
I kind of want
sent
his god
to him.
I want his god to save him. I want him to be like, "Ha, Euron, see, fuck you, the Dragon God exists."
Well, he won't.
Bino.
If a Kraken comes up and pulls the if a Kraken comes up and pulls the Silent under, then you'll know that his god saved him.
Well, maybe the Kraken sitting atop the Iron Throne is... I don't know. Okay.
Cthulhu just pops out of the water, unties him, slaps Euron's wrist, and then just descends back into the ocean.
Yeah, how dare you try to steal my job?
Yeah, exactly.
I do think Aaron, I mean, if he died, that would be the Drowned God claiming him. Like, if he died at sea like this.
So he kind of wins either way.
So you'll have to live and suffer longer. I guess it's a question of can he survive even. Though if he died, who would be the POV? Do we even need one anymore with Euron?
Maybe Victarion if he ends up coming back.
Yeah, maybe.
There's a lot of POVs out there that need to converge, so it's just a shame, just as Euron started getting really nuanced and interesting and sympathetic, like if he were then to die, that would just suck. I also feel that there's something about Euron that he wants his brother alive to witness these things. Like, it almost seems like it's a continuation of the torture from when he was little. So.
Yeah, he has the comment, obviously, it's twisted. He talks about it's all this conquest is worth something more, or something, I'm paraphrasing, if you have someone, a loved one with you.
Do you think this will be, like, a prologue or just a chapter in the book?
I think it's just a chapter.
I think it's a chapter. I think it'll actually happen fairly early on, though, in the story.
Well, I'm just saying,
Didn't George say that the preview or the prologue was going to be something to do with whoever Robb Stark married?
Westling?
Yeah, exactly.
Really? Oh, Jane Westling is going to die.
is she tall?
It could just be some random.
Well, her hips are definitely of indeterminate size, put it that way.
The POV can be anyone, so she doesn't need to die. It could be authorized Wayne or whatever, anybody.
The Night of the Seashells.
Yeah.
Well, I just feel like if this is a prologue, it would make some sense, because he always, like, he's throwing prologues at us that they seem so out of place when you first start reading the story, and you're like, what does this have to do with the rest of the people that I've been reading about this whole time? And usually the person dies, so, I mean, we could say that's the end of Euron. If this is a prologue, I would say this is it for Euron, or Aaron.
But we've seen his chapter established before, and that would be an odd move to move a POV over to the prologue when he's already a chapter character, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would seem weird.
Why would it be that weird?
Then again, George's got to start killing people, so.
Yeah,
I get what you're saying.
I think you will. I think we need not worry about that.
Yeah, we need to start cutting out this past. Does this chapter, as a final closing thing, alter your conception of who will sit upon the Iron Throne at the end of the books?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
I don't think it alters my vision of the end game, but it definitely alters my vision of how we're going to get to the end game.
Yeah, right. I agree.
I don't think Euron is sitting on the throne at the end.
No, I don't think so either. No.
Okay, how many of
but
you think...
I think if Euron gets there, there will be no Iron Throne when he's done with it.
How many do you think he will sit on the Iron Throne somewhere in the books, even if it's just prior to destroying it?
I think so.
No. I don't think so.
Nah.
Sure, why not?
There's a chance.
You want to hear
he
my
seems just
theory?
Being contrarian.
Whoa, of course we do.
Of course we do. What's a crackpot
so,
theory?
After reading this chapter, I had the idea, and I think I was talking to Eiffel on the forums about it on Twitter, and I think that there'll be a battle, maybe, possibly, or an alliance, or eventual, like, bringing together of Fagon, Connington, whoever is joining them in Westeros, and then Dany, Greyjoy's, all of the rest of them. And somehow that'll either mesh or they'll fight. I don't know. That's my weird theory on it.
What?
So they will fight or they won't fight? That's your theory?
No, but
it's a good one.
Something will happen. I don't know when, I don't know where, but something will happen.
So I think
it's
that
uncanny.
I think that there like will be some kind of like thinking of a fight, but I wonder if maybe Dany and Aegon will just come together and be like, we're all aligned now, it's totally cool. Because my original prediction was that they would both be on the Iron Throne at the end of book six. That's my, like, before reading this chapter theory.
So do you think that Dany's going to attain the throne and then book seven will mostly just be dealing with North of the Wall?
Yeah.
If there is a wall, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, true enough.
Yeah, yes. Because, like, I think that even though Aegon is Fagon, that he does have some kind of importance. I don't think he's just going to, like, I don't think Martin would have introduced him and just left him there. Like, after a couple of chapters of Winds of Winter. So I think that he will still have some importance there. But we're just not too sure about that. And I think everything will be destroyed after, like, the walk. Or the others come down.
Are we putting forward crackpot theories? Because I also have one.
Please feel free.
Go for it.
It's not really with the future, but I do like the theory that Geryon Lannister somehow found a way to survive Valyria, and Euron basically just tailed him in and out, and then just killed him after they got out.
Hmm.
To what end?
And stole all their shit.
He just needed a way into Valyria. He didn't know how he would survive it, but somehow maybe Geryon found a way in. I don't know. It's crazy.
All that really says is that Geryon is cool, right? Like that he was able to.
But I want him to be.
Explore his skills. Oh yeah, that's fine. That's fine. But as far as narrative goes, that's all it really does, right?
Can I ask a sort of like slightly 101 question? Like, what is in Valyria at this point?
Smoking ruins.
So. Yeah, like, so dead when people, like, get in there or want to get in there or they visited Valyria, ooh, like, you know, and?
I think there's definitely magic people there.
I think there's
magic, like, people. Well,
children of the forest, but volcano children or something.
Volcano children?
Are you wondering how they can, like, what's stopping them from getting in or what's in there once they get in?
What's in there once they get there?
Okay. Yeah, just magic shit.
Valyrian steel armor and dragon horns.
No,
that's
because like I have the Worlds of Ice and Fire now, but I haven't read it yet. I haven't read all of it yet, so I was just wondering: is there like a chapter where it's just going to tell me like all the cool shit that's in Valyria, or is it still very ambiguous?
Well, they talk about what Valyria was like in the past, but they don't really say like what the state of it is now.
Okay, so we don't really have a picture in our head of what Euron's been doing in Valyria.
Probably something awful.
Well, evidently, yeah, evidently. But he's, you know. He's just very hurt and, you know, expresses it badly.
Yeah.
That's one way to put it.
Okay. So it's midnight 30 now, so any final crackpot theories or other craziness? Or should we wrap this up? And by we, I mean me. Although I'm happy to leave the recorder on, actually, so if you guys want to carry on.
I think we're good.
We're good.
I'm good, yeah.
We're good. Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you to Zach, Brett, Adam, Amber, Mr. Robot, Casey, Matt, Nadia, and Small Paul for joining me today on this VAK on The Forsaken. And so hopefully keep on listening. There's going to be more Game of Thrones episode reviews coming up. There's going to be the VAK 300 episode and a Harry Potter reread that's just kicked off last night,
it's
I believe.
Excellent.
Yeah, so the triumphant return of Mikhail and good Harry Potter related stuff's going on. I actually saw
we're
the
also
ad.
Probably,
sorry.
I was going to say, just for plugging, we're also probably going to be doing a a full blown recap of the Balticon Con.
Yes.
Sometime in there.
Yay.
Look forward to that.
Please do that. Anyone else got any other podcasts that are coming up, Vox coming up that I didn't mention?
Aren't we trying to do The Hobbit?
Yes. Yeah. Like probably after the show season is done.
Yeah. Cool.
I'm like halfway into that.
I think there's Amanda and I are trying to do a Cambridge Spies one with Calvin and Archibald. And nice. I need to get around to properly scheduling the Lawrence of Arabia one. But
You said schedule.
anyone else with anything else? Is Twin Peaks still happening? I want Twin Peaks to stop happening.
Don't know.
I feel like there's one more or something.
Last time I asked Stephen about it, he said that he was thinking about getting everybody together, but nothing else.
Okay. They still got to do the movie.
Yeah, Fire Walks With Me. Oh, such a great film. Okay, well, if that's it, then yeah, stay tuned to VOK. Join us on the Podcast Advice and Prayer forums, and otherwise, Pussy out. Bye, guys.
Later. Bye, guys. Bye. Thanks.
Okay, so with that, shall we move to Aftershave? Does anyone want to play Shag, Marry, Scorpions? Or have you all got to go to eat food and go to bed?
Sounds like Euron already was with most of it, except for the Mary part.
Yeah, the problem is I was thinking, like, because normally we would play this with the people in the chapter, but it's going to be really fracking sort of, you know, between your choice of Erwan, Euron, Balon, and Victarion, my God, like, does anyone want to, like, marry any of them?
They're all my soul.
Falia.
No.
I'll marry Falia just so she can have a good life.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. Okay, so we can put her, let me put her first on the list. So basically...
I mean, she's justified, but Falia is extremely spiteful in the chapter we have before that, where she just takes delight in all the High Lords having to walk around naked and serve people.
She actually gives them the idea, right?
Yeah.
Let's not think she's some kind of summer, joyful, wonderful person. She's not.
But she's not.
That's Stockholm Syndrome.
But that's a mild revenge in the scale of revenge that's seen in this book.
That's fair enough. I don't think she's awful by any means, but she is not some kind of wonderful person.
So would you be so one shag. Night? Would you be one night marry your scorpions with Falia then? And Barry, we should explain the rules because we haven't played this for a long time. The rules are you get one night with a person, you can marry them, or you get the scorpions. So, not them. So,
I see nothing wrong with the little one night with Falia.
But you wouldn't marry her. You wouldn't make her an honest woman.
I need to get to know her better. She's not left to get her.
I don't even know if she's really salt-like material.
God, that's
wrap
harsh,
it up, Adam. Zach. You don't know where she's been.
Maybe. That's mean. I would marry her just to give her a safe home, and she's got a kid now. Come on, like
you want to raise Euron's bastard child?
Well, I believe in memes, not genes. So I guess I would be more relaxed about that.
There's no genes in this world. They have breech clouds.
I'm gonna put a poll. Like when I put this on the forum, this episode, I'm gonna have a poll. Be honest, who knew what a breech clout was before you read this chapter?
I think I still know what you're talking about.
I think the people of Vok will be with me. I think no one knew. Okay. Aaron, one night marry scorpions. Thoughts? Amber,
scorpions.
Speak to me.
I guess one night.
He's not that
bad. If you could get him to shut up about the damn ground god.
The old Aaron, you'd one night, but this one, not so much.
Crazy party Aaron sounds great.
This whole thing just makes
yeah,
me
exactly.
Go,
be drowning Aaron is fine.
He could piss farther than anyone, right?
Small pool.
It just.
Now that's a good guy.
It just shows you how good that the Stark's influence was on Theon. The fact that Theon was actually a semi-decent person.
He only
but it didn't take,
though,
did it?
A dick.
Yeah.
Well, he was a dick because he went back. Like, he was going back to be like, yeah, we're going to get behind the Starks and we'll do this together. And then his dad's like, what? No, we're assholes. We don't do that.
Well, Asha's semi-decent and she's never had that experience.
She's a girl. That's why.
Is she decent, though? I mean, she wants to
read,
too.
She's not nice. She's not nice, but she's
not...
But
she's better than the rest of them, right?
Yeah,
she doesn't let them kill the Glover's children.
Yeah, she wanted to leave, but she realized when it went too far and when you
right.
Had
she,
peace.
She has a core of morality and sort of logic. She, you know, she's pretty grounded as opposed to these people with all their bullshit.
She didn't
bullshit.
Want to destroy yeah, the entire world and make herself a god, so.
Yeah.
No, she just didn't think of it.
Euron Greyjoy, one night marry scorpions. I'm pretty much
scorpions.
Yeah, thank God for that.
Oh, I'm going to marry him. He's going to put me on the Iron Throne.
Yeah, he's giving me all the dresses.
That,
yeah.
That's what he says to all the girls, Brett.
Brett, are you tall?
No, oh my no, God. I'm not.
Brett's going to be his maple wife.
This maple god, he'll put me on the front of his ship.
Oh, finally, you'll get the maple throne from
like
your brother.
Sounds like a euphemism.
I don't know if you could get him, if you could keep him from killing you for one night though, or torturing you or doing terrible things, like it'd probably be a good night.
Yeah, I bet he's pretty freaky.
Yeah, he's that bad guy. Yeah, all the women like him for one night.
Exactly.
You I don't
but would it be worth it, the risk?
Just come on, an eye patch, ladies, an eye patch. Yeah, yeah, it is sexy.
Maybe on the Phantom of the Opera, not on your own.
I guess the real question for Casey would be Euron or Ramsay.
Oh, God.
Scorpions.
It's only the show, Ramsay. Oh, my God.
Do you fancy his show, Ramsay, Casey? Have I missed this by not listening to Dragon Cast? Yeah.
Okay. I like the actor.
Yeah, very I know. Pretty. My sister has a crush like... on the show, Ramsay.
He's very pretty. The sexy scenes are sexy. A bit, but you know, I hate Ramsay still, okay?
That sounds like a one night to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hate you, but goddamn, you're attractive.
Can we officially get you on the record with Ramsay here?
I mean,
I'm recording.
I mean, my personal fantasy about this is that I put him in his place. So,
which is underneath you.
Yeah.
Exactly. Jesus Christ.
Good for you, Casey.
I can hear the fan fiction being written right now.
So,
by Imogen
so one,
I'm on it.
Imogen
so
O-B.
One Night Marry Scorpions, left hand Lucas Codd.
Balon? One Night Marry.
Oh, Balon? Okay, he's dead.
I'd marry him. He's king. What's not to like?
Was he's good. Dead too, being easy.
Yeah, exactly.
Married a dead guy. Just to inherit?
Well, kind of. I went to see this amazing, really funny Jane Austen movie starring Kate Beckinsale, who I know some of you really fancy today, called Love and Friendship.
Why Raven?
And she plays this kind of like scheming, sort of adulterous, but brilliantly witty and brilliant woman. And she has this line to Chloe Sevigny, who plays her best friend, who's married to Stephen Fry, where she says, problem with him is he's, your husband, is he's too old to be governable and too young to die.
What about Theon at this point?
At this point?
Like, I don't think it's physically possible, right? You don't have a dick.
You can spend a night with someone and not have sex with them that easy.
Yeah,
also don't still have sex.
Matt, you do realize there's forms of sex that don't involve using a dick, right? I mean,
not that I'm aware of.
Oh, Jesus Christ!
Sure.
Very, very monodimensional sex life.
I mean, I think we can all agree Theon's pretty whipped by now.
I think it would have to be Mary, right?
Literally.
Isn't Theon doing a Pyat Pri impression on Stannis's castle?
Huh?
Isn't he like chained to the wall?
Isn't he still
Stannis
has legs?
Have a castle?
Yeah, he's chained to the wall.
He still has legs, at least.
So he's got that going. For him.
Doesn't have all his toes, nice. But he's got his legs.
Yeah, he's got the legs.
Cool guy.
At least he has his personality.
And what about Mr. Firearm himself, Victorian?
Fire fists.
I think he'd be marriage material if he wasn't like such a dick.
He didn't beat you to death.
Well, he beat her to death because she let him rape her. I don't even understand that. But she should have been stronger, was his view. I mean, if you were, I don't know. That's why I think he would have gone for Asha.
Can I just remind you all that the first thing he thought of when his niece, may I remind you, his niece was like, oh yeah, like, I want to be queen, was, oh, I could marry her.
I mean,
and then he gets a semi.
Creepy uncle.
But wasn't his sister or anything.
Uncle.
This is a different world, Bina.
I know, but it's so creepy.
No, no, they would have forestalled a lot of terrible things if they'd have just gone that route.
I guess. Do it for the country. Ugh. Okay, there's no one else in this chapter, really, is there? Just a bunch of Greyjoys that no one really wants to marry.
Pyat Pree, anybody?
Pree!
Pree! So, Zach, you just met George R.R. Martin.
That's right.
I feel like, that's, you know, true. Like with Catholics and Relics, I'm in the presence of someone who was in the presence of George R.R. Martin. It's quite something.
It is something.
How was it?
It was really good. It was a really good time all around.
So I'm sure you've already discussed all this, but so I don't understand what, so it was like a special dinner where he was talking and then meeting people?
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Essentially, okay. Yeah.
Pree.
So you're not a secret Victorian fan, which I guess is...
Are you a fan of Dick?
I'm not at liberty to discuss that right now.
I can't believe you went there in like minute 7 of the recording. It's hilarious, White Raven.
Well, there's got to be at least one he really likes.
Indeed. One Dick?
At least one.
His right? own.
Oh.
Oh, Small Paul, as he calls him.
How dare you, sir?
Small Apple. Well, maybe
we're off the rails already.
It's maybe. Ironic, as we've talked about before in previous casts. Ironic name, Small Paul.
Exactly, big hands.
Pree. How dare you shout him down? You let him walk away.
Should have let him
Somebody's
leave.
Somebody's so
right.
selfish.
Yeah. No, see, Zach, I was talking about the part where he secretly gave you a
release
copy.
About that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Zach, didn't you like sneak up to his room?
Hey, creak his door a little bit, Zach.
I pulled a showrunner move and I turned him upside down and shook the story out of his pants. As the showrunner.
That wasn't the story.
His pants.
Yeah, when George told you about this in his hotel room, you were pretty excited, right?
Yeah, it was very secret.
He invites you up, he's like, let me show you this story.
Oh, geez.
I call it Small Paul.
Small George.
Ironically, though. Ironically.
Pree.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that we get confirmation that from him that he killed Balon. So is he a faceless man? Or?
Well, he said he wasn't there, but
yeah.
He had Balon killed.
We haven't gotten to that bit yet.
Okay.
So. Come on, Matt.
Come on, Matt. You know, where's your stamina? Don't sheet the load at the first thing. Yeah.
I blame the host for not keeping him in line.
Yeah. What am I saying? Okay, I'm taking the reins back.
Pree.
Oh my god, I can't cope. There's two anonymous lemurs on the dock. There's like a lilac lemur and a proper purple. I didn't know this could happen, that you could have the same animal twice. This has blown my mind.
We're breaking all the rules.
Oh, I'm scared.
Pree.